the big take home there is it is a matter of your bone, your skeleton, not being able to withstand the forces that you're implying on it with running. And it happens over time. Are you constantly worried about getting injured, or you don't know how to get faster as a runner and you want to continue to run for stress relief? Then this is the podcast for you. Welcome to Healthy Runner, the only place that provides you with training tips, injury recovery, and prevention tools with actionable strategies by experts in the running industry so you can develop a stronger running body and feel confident that you can overcome any obstacle as a runner. I'm your host, Dr. Dwayne Scotty, avid runner, running physical therapist and coach, educator, founder of Spark Healthy Runner, where we help dedicated runners get stronger, run faster, and enjoy lifelong injury-free running with the perfect online running coach, even if you've been told to stop running with an injury or you think coaching is just for fast runners. Learn more about our signature coaching program at learn.sparkhealthyrunner.com. Every week on the show, we coach you to grow as a runner, just like the process of building a strong, durable home that will last a lifetime, requiring little maintenance. The design and planning is your mindset. The foundation is your strength training. The framing is your run plan. The electrical and plumbing is your nutrition. The insulation, drywall, and flooring is your recovery. The landscaping and exterior is your race strategy. If you master the six parts of growing as a runner, your running will be strong and last long, hitting PRs well into your 40s, 50s, and beyond. Every week, we help a runner just like you build their dream home. I'm your host, Dr. Dwayne Scotty. Welcome to the Healthy Runner Podcast. Two months into the new year, and I'm checking in to see how your running is going. Today, I share my reflections on injury prevention, strength training, and running, and what I've learned these first 2 months of the year. If you've ever been told you have weak glutes, glute amnesia, suffered from Achilles tendinopathy, or a bone stress injury from running, then you will want to hear what I've learned at the National Physical Therapy Conference this past month. I am also sharing four key strength training and running training tips to help you build a solid foundation for which all future half marathon and marathon training will be built upon. In this training, I'm sharing with you my strength, injury prevention, and running tips that I've learned the first 2 months of this year. I will cover the following topics and probably a lot more as we get into it. The single best muscle group to strengthen for injury prevention. Three-step process to getting stronger glutes as a runner. Achilles tendinopathy updates. Bone stress injury and how to prevent them. Base training and running races. Running when travel and weather are roadblocks, four key strength training for running tips, and best shoes to wear when strength training. So whether you are training for a half marathon, a marathon, or you're just aiming to improve your daily jogs, this training has something for everyone. Prepare to challenge your preconceived notions, break through plateaus, and elevate your running game for longevity. If you're ready to take your running performance to new heights, stay healthy. Don't miss out on this educational session with seven actionable strategies you can implement into your daily routine. Let's get started today. For those of you who don't know me, and this is our first introduction, first off, welcome. My name is Dr. Dwayne Scotty. I'm a running physical therapist, coach, educator, and founder of Spark Healthy Runner. And my mission is to preserve the health and longevity of runners everywhere by allowing them to get stronger, run faster, and enjoy lifelong injury-free running. And the problem is 7 to 9 out of you right now listening to this, 7 to 9 out of 10 of you are going to get injured at some point. And the most common reason for runners getting injured during training is not having enough strength in your muscles to tolerate the demands of the training that you're doing as a runner. And there are simple strategies we can implement to tolerate the demands that either half marathon training or marathon training affords us. And trying to grow as a runner is overwhelming. For instance, like, have you ever wanted to develop a strong running body so you can stay healthy to withstand a training cycle? Or have you ever wanted to run faster, run longer, and conquer new distance goals or hit a PR at that goal race of yours? And if you don't do specific strength training exercises, here's what's at stake. Your legs constantly feel heavy during your runs, and you just feel like you can't go any faster. You keep getting injured every time you train for a half marathon or a marathon. You guess instead of following specific targeted exercises, you think that you're too old for running, and your running just keeps getting slower over time. And that leads you to feeling frustrated, feeling constantly overwhelmed with the amount of information out there. And I don't want that for you. We at Spark Healthy Runner don't want that for you. And we have a plan on how to get stronger as a runner, and you can keep doing the thing you love to run for longevity. And it's not a plan that most adult runners are following. And as a running physical therapist and coach, I've given thousands of runners a plan for optimizing strength for running, and our plan will work for you too. All you need to do is stay tuned and listen to this training. So that's step one. Next, download our 6 steps to growing as a runner ebook. Step two. And the third step is perform strength training consistently on a weekly basis and start feeling stronger, healthy, and more confident in growing in your running and conquering your next running goal. And back when I first started running in my journey at age 31, I didn't know how to do any of those things. I was frustrated because I wasn't getting any faster. And then I was constantly in the injury cycle, despite being a physical therapist. I have since learned that there are 6 parts of our running journey that need to be optimized so we can run strong and last long. What are those parts? Mindset, strength training, run plan, nutrition, recovery, and race strategy. And if you're listening to this, you probably never knew that growing as a runner is dependent upon these 6 critical parts, but it does. And once I've actually started implementing these strategies, like, the resolution just like set me free. And after mastering the 6 parts of growing as a runner, I was able to finally stay healthy for the past 6 years now, been able to get PRs in the half marathon, run 3 marathons, run the Disney Dopey Challenge of 48.6 miles in 4 days to kick off the new year in 2024. And I came actually within 4 minutes of my marathon PR without even trying to get a PR and running a half marathon the day before. So strength training, properly progressed run plan, and injury prevention has all played a key role. Not only am I improving as a runner at age 44, getting PRs, but most importantly, I'm able to get out the door, get running as a part of my life in a consistent manner, and really get my mental clearing runs, which are really key for my overall mental and physical well-being. And when you execute the 6 key parts of your running journey, you'll not only feel more confident in getting stronger and faster, you'll stay healthy and enjoy the process of running again, and also crush some races along the way if you like to challenge yourself like I do. So you can get our signature Spark Healthy Runner ebook, free resource, How to Grow as a Runner in 6 Steps, with a ton of supplemental resources, visuals, video content that's going to help provide context for what you're going to learn about today. All right, that's like the foundational principles in deep dive training. So go ahead and download your free ebook by going to learn.sparkhealthyrunner.com/grow. And success in running starts with a solid foundation. So let's begin to see why your true running potential won't be fully unlocked until you embrace strength training in order to run. So a couple of things that I really wanted to jump on here today and share with you is, number one, I went to our National Physical Therapy Conference this year. It was in Boston. It was the first time I was in Boston in probably about a decade now. So it's always a good time going to Boston. I was actually there 3 weekends in a row. Went for some nice runs down Boylston Street, past the Boston Marathon finish line multiple times. did some nice long runs along the Charles River, met up with actually a former client of mine. Shout out to you, Lisa, for going for a nice little easy run together. Enjoyed our conversation along the Seaport area. Very windy, but I enjoyed our run along the Seaport. And I wanted to really take what I learned that weekend at our National Physical Therapy Conference and share some of the information that I learned, really kind of some key take-home points that I think is really applicable to you, the runner, within our running community. Because these conferences, I think there was about 13,000, don't quote me here, physical therapists here at this conference. This is our largest conference throughout the year. And a lot of PTs are in those rooms, right, hearing these talks. And a lot of them are really learning to kind of grow in their craft, like be able to help their patients a little bit better, find out what the latest research is, and implement those things. But a lot of times, like, this stuff isn't shared with you, the actual runner in our community. So I thought this would be a great platform to do that and to share like three key take-home points that I think are critical for you knowing as a runner. So the first take-home point is that the glutes are king and the hips still don't lie for runners. As you guys know, I like to say, like Shakira, hips don't lie, right? Same goes for running. And this was actually an amazing talk. It was my favorite talk of the whole long weekend by Chris Powers out of the University of Southern California. It was all about glutes and current research evidence in how do we actually strengthen the glutes, and a couple of key take-home points that I thought was worth reiterating. We've done some previous trainings on strength training, on how do we activate and strengthen the glutes for runners. So a couple of these things you've probably even heard me mention before, but it was really good to hear from like the research expert out there in the field actually doing these high level publications and, you know, presenting on it at our national conference. So a couple of points here. Strengthening the glutes has been shown to help within the interventional literature, so our treatment-based literature, multiple times for people suffering from low back pain, femoral acetabular impingement syndrome, or anterior hip pain, so pain in the front of your hip joint, like impingement in the hip, and patellofemoral pain syndrome, or what we call runner's knee. So if you've had a history of any of those conditions, you are going to benefit from activating and strengthening your glutes, right? So why is glute strengthening difficult? From an evolutionary standpoint, and this was very interesting, this part of the talk, is that it's thought that this muscle has evolved for bipedal locomotion, for our survival, in order to run and be able to climb. So our current state and where we are as a society is we live a very sedentary lifestyle, right? Most of us probably have desk jobs and we're doing a lot of sitting. And think about what our kids are doing versus like what we did as kids, right? And he talked about that this muscle is like de-evolving essentially. With aging process, this is like the first muscle to go. And then our young kids who are entering sports and maybe in early childhood, if you don't really have your kids, you know, be pretty darn active. I know we put my girls in like gymnastics early on, excellent, excellent activity for developing all different, you know, parts of coordination, strengthening, flexibility, balance, right? Like it kind of has all of those key components that will translate into other sports. But young kids like entering sports in middle school or high school who live pretty sedentary lives and they're like gaming all day, or they, you know, are attached to the iPad when they were younger and didn't really develop like the strength, stability of these muscles. Like, honestly, you know, most of you listening to this right now, I'm going to assume you're at least in your 30s, probably 40s, 50s and beyond. You know, we were outside every day, right? We were outside playing. We were playing sports. Like, I know I was playing sports every day. My mom had to call me in when it got dark and, you know, call us in for dinner. Like, we were always outside running, jumping, playing different sports, riding our bikes. Unfortunately, due to a number of factors, whether it is the demands of schoolwork, whether it is safety-wise, because it's a definitely a different day than, you know, when I was a kid, even, you know, kids aren't really doing that, right? They're on their phones, they're on social media, they're gaming. So kids having a more sedentary lifestyle really has, you know, shown up when they go to play sports in middle school and high school, especially female athletes. We see this a lot, that we have this kind of decreased strength or this glute amnesia or dead butt syndrome, whatever you want to call it. And it's this chronic disuse that creates difficulty contracting the muscle. And if you have a sedentary lifestyle, you're working at a desk and you've been doing it for 10, 20, 30 years, right? Like, that's probably you as well. And the glute max, so the big beefy muscle back there, is our running muscle. And weakness of this muscle, or, you know, you talked about, is this really a weakness issue or is it a compensatory activation problem? And I totally agree on this point, because you're going to get some naysayers who, you know, whatever, out there on social media or whatever, other podcasters will say, like, there's no such thing that you have weak glutes. Like, if you had weak glutes, you wouldn't be able to walk. You wouldn't be able to get out of a chair. But there are compensatory strategies that we utilize, and there are other muscles that kick in. Hence why I see so many runners with hamstring, upper hamstring tendinopathy, because of this activation issue, and they're using the hamstrings when the glutes should be the prime mover, right? And then they wind up getting this overuse of the tendon. So I see it a lot in my practice, in the clients that I help nowadays. And I do agree that it is an activation problem more so than a true strength problem. And we have overuse of certain muscles, such as the hamstrings, the adductor muscles, so your kind of inner thigh muscles, your groin muscles, as well as the TFL muscle, so your tensor fasciae latae. That's that small muscle that connects to your IT band, and it pulls our leg, our long femur bone, into this adducted, internally rotated position, because those are the functions of those muscles. That's what they do. And when that happens, we get this kind of knee drop, dynamic valgus, and it really occurs along like three planes of motion. And most PTs like know about dynamic valgus, knee drop. I talk about in previous trainings of like hip drop in runners, because that's very common. And then the knee goes in. So that's a contributing factor to most of my clients who have IT band syndrome, runner's knee, posterior tibial tendinopathy, and may even be a contributing factor for someone with Achilles tendon pain or plantar fasciitis. And the glutes are key to preventing that kind of biomechanical consequence with our running. And Chris Powers talked about this three-step process, which I absolutely loved, because this is exactly what I've designed in our Healthy Runner coaching program. And he talked about his three-step process is, one, activate to prime the nervous system. So I like to call that the restore phase. We're restoring fundamental running movement patterns, activating specific muscles. And then you talked about two, strengthening. So that's kind of the rebuilding phase of our program. And then you talked about movement training. And that's kind of the retraining part of our program. So you have to think of it in three phases. And I get a lot of clients who have worked with PTs in the past that, you know, they've been doing the clamshell exercise and they've still doing the clamshell exercise, the same exact dosage, the same exact prescription that their PT gave them like 10 years ago. And they've never actually progressed beyond the activation stage. They've never progressed to the strengthening and the movement retraining phase. And they're wondering why their like stubborn injury keeps coming back when they're trying to train for their next race or run faster or run longer, right? And it's because you didn't go through these three phases. So those three phases are key. And then conversely, I'll also get people who say, oh, I know I needed to get stronger. I, you know, signed up to work with a personal trainer. So we've been doing squats, we've been doing deadlifts, you know, we're doing some like strength training exercises. But the problem is we never actually taught your body to activate the muscles that you should be activating. So you're really using compensatory muscles and strategies to be able to complete those squats, those deadlifts. So there needs to be this kind of progression, and Chris Powers talked about it. So I really enjoyed that talk, and it was nice hearing from, you know, one of the lead researchers in this area that he was kind of framing it in that lens. So I totally see that clinically speaking, from my experience working with thousands of runners, I've seen the same exact pattern, and that's what I've developed the system. So it's always nice when your theoretical models, right, and your clinical expertise, you know, is starting to show in the literature, because we always know that literature takes a while to catch up, right? And we want to make sure we're making like evidence-informed decisions as practitioners. So that was good to hear. Other key points from this talk that I think you guys will definitely benefit from is he talked about squatting depth. And from a rehab standpoint, or really if your goal is really glute strengthening, and that's your goal of doing squats is to strengthen your glutes, strengthen your muscles, then he really talked about that you don't need to squat deep. And you want to squat to the depth to maintain a neutral spinal position only. Because the deeper you go in a squat, and I know there's like this huge movement out there that like we got to be able to squat, get your butt all the way to the floor. Like when we were first born, we all were able to squat and now we can't. So like, let's force the issue. Let's get down to the floor. When we go deeper in a squat, the glute max actually loses mechanical advantage and the adductor magnus gains mechanical advantage. So research has shown this, and they've done these studies in labs measuring the force production of these muscles. When we actually squat to a depth of 70, 80, and 90 degrees of hip flexion, the glute max has the lowest mechanical advantage versus the hamstrings and the adductor magnus. So if your goal is to focus on glute max strengthening, you do not need to go that deep in a squat. The other thing that I found fascinating is that they've shown research the optimal trunk position in order for us to activate those glutes is about 45 degree lean forward. So you want to think about 45 degrees trunk lean, but not too much trunk lean where you're like more is better kind of deal, because anything beyond 45 degree tilt really does start to load the spine a lot in terms of your discs, as well as really overloading the erector spinae muscles. So in summary, if you think when you're doing your squats, if you think more about less lowering, don't needing to go so deep, and you get usually most people, if they're restricted in hip mobility, get this butt wink, we call it, and you're turning your glutes off anyway. So you're not strengthening your glutes. So you've lost the benefit from going that deep, right? And you're probably putting more stress to your spine. Think about adding a little bit of forward trunk and spine tilt to no more than 45 degrees to help strengthen those glutes for running. All right. If you want to get a little bit more in-depth information, if this, some of this stuff was like fascinating to you and you're like, oh, okay, I want to learn more about like strong glutes, I actually have a downloadable free resource, our strong glute guide. You can go ahead and download that at learn.sparkhealthyrunner.com/stronghips. Second main take-home point that I got from conference was about Achilles tendinopathy. And this was a great chat that was led by one of the lead researchers in Achilles tendinopathy, Karen Cybernagel, out of the University of Delaware. And she really shared, you know, the plethora of research that has really come out within the last decade or two on Achilles tendinopathy. Some key points that I'll share with you that I thought was really interesting, and I think you would find interesting as well, is only 4% of Achilles tendinopathy patients or those suffering from it actually rupture their Achilles tendon. Because I know I get this fear a lot in a lot of the runners I work with Achilles tendinopathy, that they're afraid, right, of running with some pain. And we actually know that tendon loading is important for adaptation, and actually running is one way to load the tendon for adaptation. And we don't need to be pain-free in order to run and still heal from this injury. But I get a lot of runners that are fearful of that. So I always need to reassure them that, like, you are not going to snap your Achilles tendon and rupture it. Right. Or if I have a runner who is training for a race, they have some mild Achilles tendinopathy, I'm like, you can push this and you can feel really confident. Like, you're running straight plane. that's not even the mechanism of injury of how you actually rupture your Achilles tendon. It's a strong explosive movement where you're going from like zero. So if you're a sprinter, different conversation, and you're listening to this for some reason, most likely most of the people listening to this are distance runners and we're not sprinting. So if you're running a 5K or above or anything longer, like this doesn't apply to you. You're not going to rupture your Achilles tendon at a race. All right. So I think that's reassuring to know. And it was nice to hear some stats of like only 4% of the people with Achilles tendinopathy actually rupture. And I guarantee you that those 4%, it wasn't done running. It was probably something else, stepping off a curb too quick, preventing themselves from falling, carrying something and just stepping the wrong way, playing a pickup game of basketball, playing some softball and going to explode out of the box. Like those are the mechanisms of injury, jumping up and landing the wrong way. That's how you're going to rupture your Achilles tendon, not with Achilles tendinopathy. Tendon loading is key for adaptation and healing, but also the reason for injury. So now let's talk like injury prevention, because I think this is like fascinating, right? So we talk about tendon loading from a healing standpoint when you have Achilles tendinopathy, but the best way to prevent Achilles tendinopathy is tendon loading. And oh my goodness, I've seen this tremendously in my personal like strength training journey, which I'm going to share actually four key takeaways to what I've learned about strength training like these past 2 months and like just reflecting on the last 3 years of kind of having a base training phase in my yearly running training and in calendar. That's like key for preventing yourself from developing this in the first place is loading and adding strength training and adding load and lifting heavier. So that was fascinating to hear that. Treating minor symptoms with load control versus symptom control, meaning if you feel a 1 or 2 pain in your Achilles tendon after your run, don't just put ice and take Advil to like mask the symptoms. You actually need to treat it with loading and specific exercises that actually helps remodel the tendon and get it stronger. Increased pain the week before their period for females with tendinopathy. This is one of those injuries that's actually more common in males than females, but if you are a female out there, I thought that was kind of interesting because I've never heard a hormonal link with pain levels, but there has been, that has shown up in the literature that females with Achilles tendinopathy, you know, you could expect an increase pain little spike the week before your period. Underloading is a bad thing. Overloading is a bad thing. So in kind of treating Achilles tendinopathy, we need to have the right recipe of loading in how much we should be loading the tissue. And I did talk about this in depth in our Return to Run blueprint and how we get back into running despite injury. And that certainly applies to Achilles tendinopathy. So you can go back, check out that episode if you want to learn a little bit more about kind of the pain monitoring model and how much load is the right amount of load. And our goals for rehab are to optimally load the tendon to remodel it in order to improve function with running. And how we optimally, you know, load the Achilles tendon is key, and you need to determine that. And thinking about the peak Achilles force that occurs with different levels of activity. With jogging, for example, right? So we're doing our easy run out there. 4.5 times your body weight is the actual force that's transmitting through the Achilles tendon. That's why easy running can be a very effective way to load the tendon. And with kind of running, maybe at a little faster pace, we're really going 5 to 5.5 times body weight. And then when we sprint, so if you're doing hard speed work and that spikes your pain, you might be overloading because sprinting is 12.5 times your body weight is the amount of Achilles force that's required for sprinting. So I thought that was pretty fascinating that it really doubled the amount of force that's required for the Achilles in terms of body weight with sprinting versus running. So again, if you are doing hard interval work, track workouts, and that is spiking your Achilles pain, then you might need to back off of some of the speed work until you increase the load capacity of the tissue first. And we need to make sure that, yeah, so this was my take-home point, is pretty much what I just mentioned, is that you need to wait until structure and function of the tendon are restored before adding speed work or faster running. So we need to embrace the easy run, not only for your Achilles healing, but hey, for our cardiovascular system anyway, right? Zone 2 training is going to benefit us as distance runners in the long run anyway, pun intended. So if you don't want to buy into the Achilles and you're like stubborn and you're like, I don't want to, you know, have to modify my running because of my Achilles pain, just know, like, if you do, hey, you know what? You're going to get a secondary benefit and probably get faster in the long run because you've actually honed in on easier running and you've actually probably implemented true easy running for the first time, maybe ever in your training. And guys, if you want to learn more about Achilles tendinopathy, I'm going to have a brand new training coming out and a huge kind of resource that I've been working on for quite some time now. So I'm really excited to have this one come out because we've never done a kind of downloadable ebook for Achilles tendon pain. So that's coming out soon. But in the meantime, if you're listening to this, it's not out yet, then, you know, check out episodes 60 and 61 on the Healthy Runner podcast. I know it goes back a ways, but all that content is still gold, honestly. And it all holds up to what I just heard about at conference in terms of like the latest literature. So nothing has really changed from what I presented in those two episodes in terms of like, why does your Achilles hurt when you run? And then treatment and prevention strategies for Achilles tendonitis. All right. Third topic that I wanted to share with you from conference is bone stress injuries. And this was a talk from Rich Willey. He's one of the experts in this area out of the University of Montana. And just so you guys know, because there's probably a bunch of people who don't even know what a bone stress injury is, the true definition is a failure of the skeleton to withstand submaximal forces acting over time. The injury results from failed healing response illustrated by a feedback loop of failure to meet ongoing demands to bone and repair of micro damage and represents a continuum of injury to the bone that can progress to a stress fracture or a full cortical break. So a full blown fracture in your bone. So through all levels of the bone, the cortical is like the kind of the components of the bone. I know that was very wordy, probably way over your head. The big take home there is it is a matter of your bone, your skeleton, not being able to withstand the forces that you're implying on it with running. And it happens over time. It's not an acute injury. It's been happening chronically for weeks, if not months, if not years. And it's created this micro damage and kind of injury in the bone. And there's a continuum. And now the new nomenclature is like bone stress injury, because it really goes from like a stress reaction and maybe some swelling to maybe a stress fracture and then like a full blown fracture. So there is this continuum that occurs. A couple of kind of take home points that I think will be helpful for you is greater vertical displacement and decreased step rate with running are associated with bone stress injury risk. And that's been shown in the literature. So the greater amounts we run up and down. So if you're like, you know, running and you look like a bunny rabbit, it's like almost Easter. So it's like great time of the year. If you're bopping up and down a lot and having a lot of vertical displacement and your step rate is decreased, meaning your cadence is decreased, then that has been associated with bone stress injury risk, right? Because you're now hitting the ground down, your mass, your body weight is coming down on the ground, and there's more forces that are applied to your bone. So peak vertical ground reaction force is likely a factor to bone stress injury, meaning the lighter you hit the ground, the better. And there is no evidence that shoes impact bone stress injury risk. However, keep an eye out on the super shoe literature. So they're just starting to get some literature with all these super shoes now, with the carbon plate, with all the great foam. You guys have seen all the super shoes. I've talked about, you know, myself utilizing super shoes in some of my races. I haven't tried the Nike ones yet, but I've done Saucony, the Pro 3s, the Elites, and then I ran my Dopey challenge in the Adios Pro 3 as well. I did have the Endorphin Pro 2s, definitely much different than the 3s, but you know, we are starting to see like some runners, and I've seen a bunch of runners who have had some, you know, foot symptoms running in their super shoes. So within the literature, they're actually starting to see more navicular injuries. So that's a small bone in your foot, in your midfoot, with super shoes. And they're starting to see about a 20% associated increased risk of running related injury with super shoes. So more to come on that, but I think the moral of the story, I'll give my take, you know, having used them before, having actually some mild symptoms when I first transitioned last spring, when I started using the Saucony Elites in my posterior tibial tendon, is it does require a great amount of foot and ankle stability. So if you have strong feet, you've been working on that, you've been working on the exercise we've talked about before on the show, then you should be good to go. And progression is key, right? You don't want to get your super shoe 2 to 3 weeks before your marathon and you're like, this is my race shoe, and I've heard I don't want to put a lot of miles on it, I just want to use it for the race because it's going to function the best. Like, I would allow your body and give a bunch of test runs in speed work as well as a long run. Make sure that you don't have any symptoms on those before you actually try it out for race day. So it's my kind of quick little add to super shoes, but there's going to be a lot more on that, guys, coming out. So I don't want you to think, I don't want to scare you, I don't want you to think like, definitely don't do super shoes. But I think just like anything, right? We need to, you know, think about this with caution. And just like we saw with the barefoot running movement about 15, 20 years ago, we started seeing a lot of stress fractures in the feet from those just taking up barefoot running. Same thing goes here. I think we are going to see, you know, some increased injuries associated with super shoes. But I think if you do it the right way and you allow your body to adapt, just like anything, honestly, we talk about with running, you know, they might be a beneficial kind of piece to some of your racing. If you're looking for like racing for performance, then I think there can be some benefit there. Other kind of facts about bone stress injuries is that risk factors for runners are multifactorial. And it's really looking at like biologic, genetic factors, sex differences, and the overall picture, emotional, social well-being. Like everything it's kind of multifactorial in a lot of the presentations that were presented about bone stress injuries. And then another one that I thought was like key, because we talk about this in our recovery blueprint and how important it is for recovery from running, is that sleep has also been shown to be a risk factor for bone loss and may influence bone healing. So if you are like grinding it, if you're like, you know, I'm going to sleep when I die, like, you know, you're not buying into like sleep, you might want to change your mindset, especially if you've had a history of bone stress injuries, because that has been shown to be a risk factor. So more of a reason to try to get more sleep. I know that is my current goal right now. My main focus is to try to really double down on sleep. And it's been a slow incremental progress for me personally. I've mentioned this many times on the podcast before, and I think this is going to really improve over these next couple months. And when I share the news with you that I talked about last week on the show. But the best way to prevent bone injuries is by proper load management. And what does that mean? A running plan that is properly progressed, so you're not having these huge spikes in weekly mileage, in speed work, in long runs, and strengthening your lower leg muscles, especially your hips, ankle, and foot muscles. So now coming up next, guys, I'm going to share with you my personal thoughts and keys to strength training and running, and that I've implemented during this base building phase, the first 2 months of the year. It's time to take a real quick break. And before I say any more, I truly hope the message so far today has benefited you from either a running or a health standpoint. Maintaining healthy feet is super important in recovery and strength within our six steps to growing as a runner framework. Staying in line with that theme, I wanted to take this opportunity to share with you one of the best partners for foot health, and that is Neboso, which is a company that is dedicated to redefining what's underneath your feet so you can feel more to move better as a runner. Better stability means better movement, which for us means better running. Neboso's newest product, the Kinesis Board, features dual sensory stimulation, a micro wobble system, and a single leg platform. This has been a great tool for runners to get in 5 minutes of single leg stability training. And the best part about it is you can incorporate this into your everyday activities, or how I like to use it is as muscle activation prior to heading out the door for my runs. Training balance on one leg, after all, is how we balance during running. And that is why the Kinesis board is designed for one leg at a time. Want to learn how you as a runner can activate, strengthen, and recover from running? Listen to episodes 116 and 212 on the Healthy Runner podcast to learn from Neboso founder, podiatrist, and human movement specialist, Dr. Emily Splickle herself. You've heard me rave about the Neboso Splay, the recovery ball, and the textured recovery socks before, and now this is just another tool I highly recommend you add into your runner's toolkit to improve your strength as a runner. These past 2 years, I personally have been on a marathon journey, and I really couldn't imagine my body feeling as good as it does without the assistance of Neboso's products, which has helped keep me healthy as a runner. Learn more about Neboso's textured products and how they can connect you to your exercises and your running by strengthening your feet and helping you recover from all those miles. Since you're a part of our Healthy Runner community, you will get 20% off all of your orders. Just use the code HEALTHYRUNNER during checkout when placing your order using the special link we have for you in the show notes. Go ahead and give Neboso a try. Your feet will thank you for it. I know mine always do. Now let's get back into this episode. Personally, I've been in this base training phase now for my off season the past 8 weeks after the Disney Dopey Challenge. I got my little magnet right there. I got my ears that I got from the Disney Marathon right behind me, and you can probably see that Dopey Challenge medal behind me, which was pretty awesome. And this is honestly one of my favorite times of the year because it really takes me back to, I've mentioned this multiple times before, I was like the gym rat, right? Ever since like college, never ran, only ran for cardio. And I've always loved getting in the gym, and I used to do it 5 days a week in the gym. And this base building phase, so this 10 to 12 week period within my yearly calendar, really focuses on me getting back in the gym 3 times a week and focusing on lifting heavier these 3 months out of the year. Notice how I said 3 months out of the year. I did not say 12 months out of the year. Do I lift heavy while I am in marathon training? Yes, but it looks a lot different. It's not as heavy, and it's not as many rep sets volume-wise, and it's not as many exercises. So here are some of my thoughts regarding running and strength training during the first 2 months of the year. I really broke this down into 4 key points. Point number one, base training means no racing. Mind blown concept. I am still seeing way too many runners racing during their quote unquote off season, and they're racing. They're not just like doing a run for fun. Like I actually just did a fun run this past Saturday with my daughter, Olivia, the Oceananigans 5K in Southington, Connecticut here. And this is our second year doing it. She actually used to work at Sauce, the pizza and the brewery place where it was hosted. And we did it last year when she was working there. So she asked if I wanted to do it. I was like, sure, let's do it. So I technically raced in my base training, but it was not a race for me. right? It was still an easy run. I still followed my coach's plan that was planned and the intention of the run. I had a long run the day before. It was actually a harder long run. It was my first hard long run. So kind of a long run with spice since the Disney Marathon. And it was 12 miler. Oh my goodness, I need to actually share this with you guys because this was like a total fueling fail. And hopefully you'll learn from my mistakes. But I went out for the long run. And this is so important to actually make sure you have enough fuel on board beforehand, just in case this fail happens to you. I got to the 4 mile mark, and that was the mark when I was going to have my first gel. I go to reach in my pocket for my gel. My gels are not there. I check all my pockets, no gels. Mike, are you kidding me? Now I'm 4 miles out from my house. I'm on the trail. I'm like ready to go another 2 miles away from my house on the trail because I go 6 miles and then I go six back for the 12 mile run. And then it's nice to be on the trail for those first 2 miles back because these were spicier miles. Like I was running at a moderate effort. It was like a 50K pace, so slightly slower than marathon pace. And I was like, okay, Dwayne, don't panic. What are you going to do? Like, how are you going to get gels? You're not going to be able to finish this 12-mile long run without any fuel. So I knew that was not even a possibility. And so luckily, I actually took in a good amount of fuel beforehand. So I probably had a banana. I probably had like 3 or 4 full graham crackers. I had some almond butter with those. And then I actually took my UCAN pre kind of long run fuel beforehand, like right beforehand. So I ate all that probably like 2 hours before the run. And I took my long run pre-fuel probably about 15, 20 minutes before I headed out the door. So I had enough on board where I knew I wasn't going to like totally hit the wall. So I was like, all right, Dwayne, what do you got to do? You got to run back home. So I ran back home 4 miles. So I was at the 8 mile mark, got my 2 gels that I was supposed to bring with me, took one immediately, did my run. Then 2.5 miles later, I took the other gel just to make sure I had enough fuel to recover from my long run because recovery is so important. Hopefully that story, I kind of digressed there, but hopefully it's helpful for you that if you ever forget your gels, or I didn't forget them, they actually fell out of my pocket. So I think when I reached in, I grabbed like mitten or something, they must've fell out. I never heard them. My wife like made fun of me. She's like, how are you going to hear your gels? They'll make a loud noise. And I'm like, I couldn't believe that I lost them. So you got to have like backup plans. And that's why it's so important to fuel before your runs, guys. And we stress that a lot. Don't go out on an empty stomach. You're not going to burn more fat. You're not going to lose weight. You're just going to feel terrible for your run and you're not going to recover from your run so you can actually train hard. So I was able to like get in the long run, accomplish that, and actually run this fun 5K the next day with my daughter. So guys, if you're in off season, if you're in base training, you need to dedicate. That is the focus of this training block. So 8, 10, 12 weeks minimum should be like base training. This is your off season. Stop going out and racing a race, right? That's not the intention of this time period because it's going to eventually catch up with you. And you're going to wonder why your Achilles starts hurting, your knee starts hurting when you're in like week 10 of half marathon training, when you're in week 14 of marathon training, because it's cumulative stress over time. So stop racing and base training, please. And thank you. I see way too many runners still doing this and, doing this mistake. If you want to learn more about base training and you're like, what the heck is base training? What is he talking about? And like training cycles, check out episode 168 on the Healthy Runner podcast, where I really did a deep dive on like base training in order to actually have your best race season. Second point that I want to share with you is that our running needs to be flexible with travel or weather during the beginning of the year. So stop being so darn rigid. And my schedule has been a bit crazy. I've shared some of it last week with you. And I had this conference in Boston that I just mentioned, went to Providence straight from Boston for a volleyball tournament. And then 2 weekends right after that, back to Boston for 2 different volleyball tournaments for each of my girls. So the schedule has been definitely a little chaotic in terms of like travel wise, staying in hotels, right? Maybe needing to wake up early to go to the volleyball tournament. So I need to run a little bit earlier. This coming weekend, I'm actually traveling to Long Island for my goddaughter's dance competition. So I'm moving my run that's planned, my coach had planned for me on Saturday. I'm moving it to Tuesday of this week, right? So you have to be flexible and you have to modify. And that's where a good coach can come in handy, where they can help you with that, make those decisions. And then when it's icy, snowy, too cold, like move your runs to a treadmill. And I finally have gotten over this. Coach Katz can be so proud of me. This has been the most that I've run on a treadmill ever in my life, was this winter. And honestly, most of it was in January because we had a really mild like February and March so far, knock on wood. So I've been able to get all my runs outside. But in January, we had a couple of really, really cold, windy days and a couple of days where ice and just the timing of snow. We didn't get like pounded with snow, but the roads were not cleared yet. So the way most of the storms worked out in January were like just not conducive to early morning runners, which I am. So I had to actually run on the treadmill a bunch. So run on the treadmill. You'll be able to get your run in. It's definitely, if you're someone who is like me, like never run on the treadmill kind of deal, and you find the treadmill boring, like get Coach Katz 30-minute follow along treadmill routine. It's on our YouTube channel in which she will guide you through a fun workout run that is not boring and it's scalable for any level runner. So no matter if you are like a sub-3 marathoner or you're a 15-minute pace runner, like you will be able to do this actual treadmill workout because it's scalable and based upon RPE. So rating and perceived exertion. So get that, training video to help you be able to get a run in on the treadmill when, you know, the weather is bad. And if you want to listen to that episode on the podcast, it's episode 206. The other thing that is important in the beginning of the year, first 2 months of the year, is like properly wearing the right clothing for winter running. And we did a whole episode 202 on winter running gear from head to toe with Coach Whitney. So if you want to learn how to dress for winter running and cold weather running, check that training out as well. But my key take home point here is you got to be flexible. And like I've been super consistent with my running because I'm flexible. And I check my weather app like every single day before because my clothing changes. It's like crazy how dramatic it is. Like last week, I actually ran in shorts and just like a shirt. And then a couple days later, I literally was running in my like coldest cold gear stuff because it was like the wind chill, the feels like it was super, super cold. So you do have to check your weather app every single day because the weather totally changes. But like you can do it. You just need to be smart and like know, okay, what temperature, you know, what layers do I need? Do I need mittens? Do I need gloves? Do I need 2 layers? Do I need 1 layer? Do I need my winter running socks? Do I need my outer shell to block the wind like I did this morning? Because it was like 30-mile-an-hour gust for my morning run this morning. But I think tomorrow it's going to be like super warm. So I'm not going to need that outer shell. So check out that winter running guide, be flexible and use the treadmill. Honestly, like use the treadmill when you need to. If you can stay consistent with your running, you're going to remain healthy in the long run. You're going to get stronger and you're going to run faster. So third take home point, get in the gym and do some strength training or get in like some strength training at home. It is the key for developing that solid foundation in which all running is built upon for months to come, right? It's like an investment. It's months, years of running is going to come from you learning how to strength training. So a couple of keys that I want to reiterate for strength training, some things that have been like top of my mind during these past 2 months is really start where you're at. You don't need to go into the gym and lift super heavy if you haven't strength trained. Like actually learning the foundational exercises, activating run-specific muscles is like key. going back to what we talked about earlier with our glutes, but like for all your other muscles, like you need to activate those muscles first, learn how to actually contract them, send the signals from your brain to the muscles, feel the muscles working, right? So start with activation type exercises. So these are ones that are usually lying down, easier, not as fun. And I always tell all my clients, like for the first 4 weeks when we work together, like that is the goal, activation. This is not going to be super fun. You're not going to be like, this is the most dynamic strength workout I've ever done in my life. That's not the point, right? You need to learn how to activate these specific muscles before we can progress to the next level. So start where you're at. If you've been doing those activation stuff, then you're ready for that next level of strength. And then if you've been doing strength training, body weight stuff for a while, you need to load now. Like now is the time we need to load. We need to add resistance. If you truly want to run for performance, like push yourself to the limits, if you're like, you know, like me, like you like challenge yourself and you want to push yourself to the limits at races, but you don't want to like get injured and you don't want a tendon problem creeping back up, you need to load in a progressive fashion and add heavier weight. And this is really what I've been, you know, focusing on these last 2 years, really during my base building phase, is lifting heavy if you've done strength training before, right? So right now it's like, I'm lifting heavy. I'm doing this morning in the gym, I did my deadlifts. Wednesday, I'm going to use my front squat as my primary heavy lift, lower rep range, 5 reps, lifting heavy where, you know, I probably can only do another 1 or 2 reps if I really wanted to push it. And I'm doing more sets. So I'm doing anywhere from 5 to 6 to 7 sets because my reps are lower, 4 to 5 reps at a heavier weight. So you have to lift heavy if you've done strength training before. And then you always want to add in at least one exercise in which you're on one leg. So adding in single leg exercises to each day of strength. So for me, my single leg exercise this morning was my reverse lunge into a single leg balance position. And when I did that reverse lunge, by the way, I did a 45 degree trunk angle to really help strike to my glutes that I learned from conference, which was awesome, by the way. So make sure you're doing at least one single leg exercise each day because we're always on one leg as a runner. I hope you are enjoying this episode and it is providing value for you. I wanted to take a brief moment to share a story of a real runner like you who is struggling with a common problem that you may be facing. Here is one of our athletes who got the guidance, support, and accountability from our Healthy Runner coaching team to get clarity and structure on the 6 steps to growing as a runner with personalized strength, nutrition, and run plans. I hope their story inspires you that there is hope to either get over your running injury or to continue getting faster or running longer so you can continue to get in those mental clearing miles and enjoy your running journey again. Here is their inspiring story.
Hi, my name is Amanda and I have been working with Dr. Scotty and the Healthy Runner team for about 3 months. And this morning I did a tempo run and I felt strong and powerful. And most incredibly, I was pain free. And I am so excited about this and about the progress I have made in the past 3 months that I just want to tell all runners what's possible. I have been a runner since I was a teenager, and in those 2.5 decades of running, I have always had some sort of little niggle or have felt like I'm on the verge of a huge injury. I could not confidently challenge myself with speed or progress in mileage, and I have never really known how to take the steps to get past that. About 3 years ago, I found Dr. Scotty's podcast and I listened to every single episode. I learned so much from what I was listening to and watching videos. But also in that time, I had developed a really bad hamstring injury, hamstring pain, and I couldn't quite shake it. Through listening to Dr. Scotty's podcast, I could still run. But I didn't know what to do to take the steps to heal it. And so I continued running and I even ran a marathon, but I always was held back because of the pain. I felt like I really couldn't push myself because I just had this nagging pain. And finally, I decided that my options were to either stop running completely, run with pain forever, or to call Dr. Scotty. And I'm so glad I called Dr. Scotty. I told him in our initial meeting that my goal was not to run a specific race, but it was to become a strong and durable runner while also increasing my mileage and to heal that hamstring. And Dr. Scotty did a detailed assessment in which he found some weaknesses that were affecting my running form and economy. And he developed a plan, a strength and running plan for me to follow. And after 3 months, I am running 30 miles a week and I'm doing strength workouts that seemed impossible. But the most valuable thing isn't what I thought it was. I thought it was going to be healing my hamstring, but the most valuable thing was that Dr. Scotty helped give me confidence to see that I am a strong runner who can handle a higher training load and also really work toward bigger goals. And in our very first meeting, I told Dr. Scotty that I had this deep fear that this wasn't going to work for me and that I was just always going to be a runner that would run with pain and that it would always be a struggle for me. And when I told him that, he didn't even hesitate. He just told me he was so excited because he knew what was possible with the right tools. And now I share in his excitement because his expertise and his encouragement and his confidence really genuinely, I believe, changed my trajectory as a runner. And so now I'm not just pain-free, I'm excited to continue to get stronger and faster. And now I believe I have the tools to do it.
I hope sharing that story inspired you and provided you some hope. If you want the one-on-one structure, accountability, and support from our Healthy Runner coaching team of experts, check out the behind-the-scenes video tour of our signature coaching program you just heard about, including other stories from runners who are just like you and were struggling with the same sticking points before they signed up for our program. Just head to learn.sparkhealthyrunner.com to learn more and book your strategy call with me today. Now let's get back into this episode. Point number four here, kind of keys to strength training, is you need to train with jump training if you have done strength training before. So if you've never done strength training, you're not starting with jump training or what we call plyometrics. But if you've done strength training before, you need to train plyometrically. We want our muscles to get that pop. If you think about what we talked about earlier with bone stress injuries, is those ground reaction forces. Jump training trains your body to hit the ground lightly and spring back up. Hit lightly, spring back up. To have less force and impact be transmitted to your bones. That's one of the benefits of jump training. Definitely another huge benefit is strengthening our tendons. So those are the most common injuries we see as runners. So we need strong tendons in order to prevent from getting Achilles tendinopathy, for example, right? So those are like four key takeaways that I wanted to share about strength training. And I've really enjoyed getting back in the gym 3 times a week, starting a 12-week progressive plyometric jump training program to strengthen my tendons so they can withstand the hard 5K training that I just started technically this week, the half marathon training that's coming after it for an early June half marathon that I'll be running, and then my wine glass marathon training block. So, right, like this plyometric training block that I'm doing right now is going to help keep me healthy, be able to run faster, and, you know, continue to get stronger like these next 7 months. So again, we have to look at this stuff in the long term. And if you guys are running a fall marathon, your marathon training literally started 2 months ago. I don't know if you knew that, but this base training phase is the most important phase of marathon training. So don't think, oh, training starts in June. Training, you know, maybe starts in May for you if you're trying to like kind of go couch to marathon and you really haven't been doing much this winter. Your training starts now. I'm sorry to tell you that. It really does start now. And if you really want the results that you want to hit your goals in the fall, like you need to be putting in the consistent work right now and doing all the things that I'm sharing with you in this episode here. A couple other extra pearls that I've learned since adding back in deadlifts this last winter is if you get back pain during deadlifts or after deadlifts, really try using the trap bar. So it's like that hex bar where you step into it. Definitely decreases the load to the lower back. During my marathon training cycle, I was using regular bar because I was lifting lighter. And I went back to the hex bar. It definitely puts a lot less load on your back. And especially with all the travel I've been doing in the car, sitting at these volleyball tournaments, a lot of sitting. My back does not like a lot of sitting, puts a lot of pressure to my discs. You know, usually I can't lift heavy with deadlifts, especially like when I'm going through that, those like time periods in my life. But knock on wood, right? Back's been feeling great. Using the hex bar and definitely doing my extension based like low back mobility exercises. So give that a shot. If you haven't tried that, hopefully your gym has one. I don't know if like any of the newer Planet Fitnesses and like, these more trendy gyms have them. It's usually more the old school gyms, and I work out at more of an old school gym. It's been in my town for like 20 plus years. So it has some of that like older weightlifting equipment, I guess you would call it. But you can certainly, if you're working out and you got a nice home gym, you can definitely purchase one for your home gym. The other thing that I really added in this year that I think is super fascinating and you would enjoy as well if your goal is to strengthen your glutes is add a mini band just above your knees for further glute activation, especially if when you do deadlifts, they're not sore and your low back is more sore. So a lot of times I see people do deadlifts. I actually just saw a girl in the gym this morning really compensating with her lumbar extensors. So her movement pattern was like lifting with her back versus lifting with her hips and hip hinge and like pushing the hips forward and using the glutes. So I really feel quite confident to say like she's probably feeling it more in her low back muscles than she is in the glutes. Like your low back muscles are going to be working a little bit, but remember the prime goal is to strengthen the glutes. Or if you feel your quads are working more than your glutes are, definitely put the mini band around your knees. That will be like a huge game changer for you because this is a hip hinge movement pattern and we should be stimulating the glutes above all. Fourth kind of final take home point here for kind of running strength training during these past 2 months is, can we just stop using our Hokas to do strength training and really use less supportive shoes in order, right? There's a goal here. I'm not just saying because I don't like Hokas. Like I have Hokas. I love running in Hokas. Because your main goal of strength training should be to strengthen your foot muscles. And I've definitely seen a movement now in the gym with the maximalist shoes, especially in the younger folks, because I think it's like trendy and it looks cool maybe for them, is really going from like not only our running community, but like the everyday gym peeps in more and more kind of quote unquote non-runners wearing Hokas to do their strength training in. And this is actually the opposite of what we actually want to achieve, because when we do strength training, we want to feel the ground and build up our foot core and strength of our deep foot muscles. And you want to think about doing your short foot exercise for runners. So if you don't know what that is, just search short foot exercise for runners on the Spark Healthy Runner YouTube channel. You'll get a great descriptive video of how to do that. And we talk about that being the best, single best foot exercise you can do as a runner to do before your runs. I did it before my speed work this morning. And you want to actually activate these muscles when you're doing your deadlifts and when you're doing all those single leg exercises. And you can't do that if you're in a high stack sneaker and you can't feel the ground. So I've been loving my Kinesis board from Neboso that I use throughout my workday as another tool in my toolbox to help strengthen those muscles. And, you know, I have a little standing desk here. So when I take my standing breaks every hour on my sit to stand desk, I use my Nebosso Kinesis board to strengthen those deep foot muscles and my ankle muscles. And if, you know, a lot of my clients, actually shout out to Mary and Andy, couple, Mary, you've heard on the podcast before, get over hamstring pain, to run the New York City Marathon. Andy is crushing his training right now, but the both of them, actually integrate their Kinesis board into their morning routine and actually do their stability exercise, while they're brushing their teeth. Fascinating. I was like, yes, that is awesome. Way to get in your foot strength. And if you haven't heard about the Kinesis board, I would highly recommend it if you want to strengthen your ankles and feet for running. I will drop our 20% off Healthy Runner discount using the special link wherever you're listening to this. I'll drop it in the comments. And honestly, I only promote products that I use myself and believe in, and this is one of them. I know it's improved my foot stability, and I know it will help you too. So you can learn more about the Kinesis board in episode 212 on the Healthy Runner podcast from Dr. Emily Splickle herself on why she created the product and how it can actually help your running. So Kinesis board, helpful tool. When you're doing your strength training, you actually want to be in a more minimalist shoe, so closer to the ground. So this would be a benefit, honestly, to even be in worn out shoes. I use zero drop shoes. So I use my Ultras. I use, what's the other brand that I have? I can't think of it off the top of my head. But I have another strength training shoe that is very minimalist. It's like almost I'm walking with socks. I need to walk lightly. And that's like the key, is I'm using my muscles to actually control the movement, and I walk a little slower. So I'm using those muscles when I'm walking around the gym and when I'm getting grounded to the floor to perform the strength training. So just recapping all of what you learned today, this went actually a lot longer than I even planned on, but I'm actually very happy I did this, because I was like debating for a couple of weeks whether to share these tips from conference. And I was like, all right, is this going to be too boring? And then just sharing like what's been going on in my head. And I honestly haven't had a whole lot of free time with all the travel volleyball that I mentioned, to do a lot of like social media posts about all of these things. So I was like, Dwayne, idiot. Like today while I was in the gym, all great ideas always come when I'm working out or when I'm on a run. I was like, dude, why don't you just like share what has been going on in your brain for the last like 2 months during your own personal training, and then share the updates that I learned from conference from like the experts in research running space. So hopefully this was like helpful for you. But summarize what we covered today. We talked about the single best muscle group to strengthen for injury prevention, the glutes. We talked about three-step process to getting stronger glutes as a runner. So that activation, strengthening, and then the movement. We talked about Achilles tendinopathy updates. We talked about bone stress injuries and how to prevent them. We talked base training and running races and not running races during your base training phase. And we talked about running when travel and weather are roadblocks. We talked about four keys to strength training for runners, just sharing kind of these four key tips that were really front of mind for me. And as I've been kind of really doubling down on the strength training during my base training phase. And then we talked about the best shoes to wear when strength training. So by listening to this training, guys, you're taking the first step toward becoming a healthier runner. I'm so proud of you. Now, next step, remember, download your six steps to grow as a runner ebook, learn.sparkhealthyrunner.com/grow. Perform strength training consistently on a weekly basis, and then you're going to start feeling stronger, healthier, and more confident in growing as a runner and conquering your next running goal. And if you don't know how to integrate strength training into your busy schedule and you want clarity, you want focus, you want accountability and support, that's exactly what we do within our Spark Healthy Runner coaching program. We teach you how to grow as a runner to not only crush your running goal, but avoid feeling frustrated because you get injured or you're not getting any faster. So we act as your guide in mastering the six key steps of your running journey: mindset, strength training, structured run plan, nutrition, recovery, and race strategy. And when you get the structure to execute those six key steps, you're not only going to feel more confident, you're going to get stronger and faster, and you're going to stay healthy and enjoy the process of running again. And you're going to crush some races along the way. And honestly, beyond the time that we're working together. So just like a well-built home, it will require a little maintenance and bring you a lifetime of memories for you and your family. So will your running. It's going to bring all those great memories, those fantastic views that you saw, those fantastic medals after the races you conquered. So you can learn more about our Spark Healthy Runner signature coaching program and schedule a call with me by going to learn.sparkhealthyrunner.com/coaching. Lastly, did you learn something today? If so, would you mind just copying the link and sharing it with a running friend who can use this information? I want our running community to continue to enjoy lifelong injury-free running. And the only way we can do that is if proactive runners, just like yourself, share this information with others so we can break the cycle and the misconceptions about running injuries and strength training as only being quote-unquote cross-training within our running community. So we know better than that, and you are our healthy runner ambassadors. So thank you in advance for sharing this content and our mission with your running network of friends. I greatly appreciate you for doing that. Now, as always, guys, let's maintain a strong mind, strong body, and let's just keep on running. Until next time. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Healthy Runner Podcast, where we help you get stronger, run faster, and enjoy lifelong injury-free running. If you found this content valuable, here's 5 ways we can help you grow as a runner for free. 1, grab a free copy of our 6 Steps to Growing as a Runner framework at learn.sparkhealthyrunner.com/grow. 2, follow our Instagram page at Spark Healthy Runner. 3, join our free group by searching Healthy Runner in Facebook. 4, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SparkHealthyRunner. 5, leave us a 5-star review so we can gain access to more experts in the running field and bring those lessons and trainings back here right to you. Don't forget, hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or the follow button on Spotify so you don't miss the next episode of Healthy Runner, so you can maintain a strong mind, a strong body, and just keep running. Lastly, if you've been struggling with the constant injury cycle, not eating the right foods for running, or not getting faster as a runner, and you are ready to invest in becoming a lifelong injury-free runner, head to sparkhealthyrunner.com/coaching to apply for our one-on-one signature coaching program. Thank you again. I really, truly mean it from the bottom of my heart that I appreciate you for listening and sharing this podcast with a running friend who can use the help. Now go and crush your run today. See you next week.